Welcome to the Cornerstone League podcast, bringing together credit union advocates, thought leaders, champions, and more. I'm your host, Tanya Ditburner, Cornerstone League Director of Communications and Media Relations. And in honor of Financial Literacy Month, I am speaking with two people who are passionate about financial education. John Lanza is the creator of The Money Mammals and the author of The Art of Allowance, a short practical guide to raising money smart, money empowered kids. The Art of Allowance Project is a program to help credit unions forge generational bonds with families through smart, fun, money empowered learning. You'll also hear my conversation with Andrew Manthai, a business development specialist at GreenPath Financial Wellness. GreenPath is a national nonprofit with more than 60 years of helping people build financial health and resilience. He's been at GreenPath for 13 years, bringing to the table a strong foundation of financial knowledge, empathy, and compassion for Americans' financial health. Both gentlemen share with me what financial literacy means to them, some common examples of financial literacy issues, and what credit unions can do to better promote financial literacy in their communities. So with me today is John Lanza, the founder and chief mammal at Sniggle Zoo. He has been working with credit unions since 2007. John, thank you for joining me today.
Tanya, thank you for having me. I'm excited.
Can you tell me how Sniggle Zoo came to be?
Yeah. So our kids who are now 18 and 16, way back when the 16-year-old wasn't even around, it was just the very young, older daughter. We were taking a drive and we were thinking about what we wanted for our, she was about 6 months old at that time. And one of the things we kind of settled on was we really wanted to make sure that she was raised money smart, because we saw that it seemed semi-random how, like, my wife has always been money smart, whereas I was the exact opposite. But we wanted to be more purposeful about this with our kids. And so, and I came from entertainment. I worked in animation. And so my first thought was, well, let's take something that's fairly boring on its face, financial literacy, and make it fun for kids. Let's turn this into something where, you know, kids aren't just excited about spending, but they're excited about sharing and saving and spending smart. And in fact, that became the mantra for the Money Mammals: we'll share and save and spend smart too. So that was really the origin. It was like, well, we have an itch that we need to scratch, and that is we got to teach our kids. And then I realized, wait, this might be something that a lot of people might like. And that kind of has led us along this winding path.
Well, so tell me real quick what Sniggle Zoo does and the Money Mammals and the Art of Allowance Project.
Yeah, I'll give you the kind of progression. So we started with the Money Mammals and we started with a video called Saving Money is Fun. That got kids excited. And then I wrote three kids' books, each tied to one of the elements of their mantra. So there's a book about saving. There's a book about sharing. And sharing is charitable giving. And then there's a book about spending smart. So we have those three books and then we have the videos. And shortly after we created the program, we realized that this is something that could really work well for credit unions because, you know, the credit union fifth principle is all about helping their members become financially literate. And so we developed a credit union program around that. So now we had this kind of Money Mammals Kids Club, but in the process of teaching our own kids and talking to a lot of other parents, I realized this is as much about the parents as it is about the kids, because we all have to face our kind of money shame or our money issues in order to be the proper models for our kids. And so I wrote this book called The Art of Allowance. It's a short book for parents, provides the framework for them to raise money smart kids. So that was a way of empowering those the parents. And then we, as our kids got older and we realized we do need something to kind of bridge the gap, we created a program called Adolescence, which helps tweens and teens. So now we have the Money Mammals, then we have Adolescence, and then we have the Art of Allowance Project. And it's all really about helping parents raise money smart kids. And it's really about empowering families to become money smart.
That's incredible. It's a holistic approach to basically changing a mindset around how people think and how families think about money.
Well, mindset is a good word because so much of this is about the psychology of money, of dealing with, you know, a lot of times people will talk about financial literacy and they will say, you know, it's not an information problem. The information is out there. So the issues with financial literacy are not about not being able to find the information. It's really about coming to terms with the psychology and the issues that we have. And frankly, The problem for us as humans, human beings, is we're kind of wired to not be very good with money because we're not future thinking. That's just not, that's not the way our lizard brains work. Our lizard brains are all about, how do I get through this moment? This is not something that's just a problem for kids. It's a problem for all of us. And so it really is about mindset. It's more about having the right behaviors in place than it is anything else.
I love that you bring up lizards because it just makes me think of what your next book could be. Don't be a lizard, be a mammal.
Exactly.
What does financial literacy mean to you?
In truth, I'm not a huge fan of the term financial literacy, only because we use it because people know what it means, but it's such a clinical term. It's like, it's more of an academic or clinical term. I really like the term's kind of money smarts and money empowered. I really like money empowered just because, you know, money smarts is kind of what we're doing with our kids as we're trying to train them to become smart about money. So we focus on the three kind of core money smart skills from the start. So that's like setting and saving for goals, making smart money choices, and distinguishing between needs and wants. And as they get older, we want them to move towards money empowerment. And the way that I think about money empowerment is that you are in control of money and money is not in control of you. And it's going to be wildly different. What is going to make different people empowered? So that's something that you have to discover, and you can really only discover that through experience. And that's one of the reasons that we are big advocates for allowance, because an allowance gives kids the opportunity to have experience with money from a young age. And how do we all learn anything? It's really through our own experiences. So it's definitely an illiteracy issue. I think we all know there's the data that's out there, you know, the generally failing grades of the average kid taking a financial literacy exam coming out of high school, right? And we know that there's a student debt crisis, and we know that parents a lot of times don't feel that comfortable about teaching their kids, even though they need to do it. So there is an illiteracy issue. But what it's not is an information issue. In other words, the information is out there. The problem is that it's less about the gathering of that information than it is about making the proper choices and being smart about your money. The fact is, if you focus on living your life beneath your means, that is going to be much more important for you than almost anything else that you do. So it's more of a behavior thing that you're trying to kind of accomplish, and you want to get that across to your kids. It's a bit of an age-old problem. So it's really about giving the kids the tools to become media savvy. They just need to know how to make the proper choices for them to help them ultimately live beneath or at their means, but certainly not above their means. That's really the danger zone and where most Americans have this issue. And that is very much a behavior issue.
So in addition to the behavior issue of basically living paycheck to paycheck and, you know, living beyond our means, wanting more and more, what other issues do you see Americans facing?
I'll put it in the context of us trying to raise money smart kids, because I have never, this is one of those questions, 100% of parents answer yes to the question, do you want to raise a money smart kid? Not everybody knows how to do that. That's really why we exist, is to help parents do that, right? And the thing that parents need to realize is that you don't have to be an expert. You don't have to be Warren Buffett to help your kids get into investing when the time comes. You just have to be prepared for the conversations that are going to come down the pipe when they're going to come down the pipe. So as soon as your kid starts to have an awareness of money, you want to be able to have conversations about money, and you want to make sure that those conversations are as positive as possible, because there's already so much kind of negativity that exists around money. And I think what we want to do is just address our own money shame or, you know, money issues that we've had, and realize that our money issues are actually a benefit, something we can talk to our kids about. So one example that I talk about a lot is when my daughter asked me about investing at first, I was very upfront with her. I said, I'm not an investing expert. I give her, you know, some people she can to talk to who are investing experts, but I also, she just wanted to invest in some stock. And so we just used I used my brokerage account. She bought a few shares, and this is not good stock advice, which is, you know, buy something that you like. But the point was less about that. It was more about understanding logistically how this works. And one of the best parts of just about dealing with that was I didn't put up a wall because I'm not an expert. And because we did that, she bought the stock, she tracked the stock, it went up pretty high pretty quickly. And then that led to these conversations that we never would have had, which is, she's like, well, can I sell it? And so we had a conversation about short-term capital gain, long-term capital gain, especially because it was in our account. So she's going to be paying our short-term capital gain tax rate. We talked about the commissions because there's only three stock. If I had sat her down and started lecturing her about it, she would have rolled her eyes. But because her money was on the line, it was her experience, she was all ears. This is all to say that you don't have to be an expert. You just have to prepare yourself. So when the conversations come up, and you don't necessarily have an answer, you say, well, hold on, give me a second. I'm going to go find, or, you know, give me a day or give me whatever time I need and I'll come back to you. And then we will figure out some creative way to deal with whatever question that you've brought up. Either you can answer it in the moment, or you can say, that's a great question. I have to do a little research and I'll get back to you.
That's a fantastic example because you displayed a sense of humility and curiosity. And that curiosity seems like it's crucial to opening those doors of empowerment. What I love about your example is that it debunks that myth that you have to have a whole lot of expendable income. All you have to have is curiosity.
You definitely do. And I'm glad you brought that up because I will use specific examples when, say, you know, coming up, talking about an allowance, talking about investing, having them learn to get comfortable with money and having their own experience with money. And another good example is there's going to be some point where you're going to be handing your, if you don't have an allowance system, you're going to be handing your kids money for something. Turn that into an allowance. You know, that's, there should be no resistance to this because when it's their money that they're controlling, they are so much more careful with it. Whereas if you're just handing them money, they don't care and they shouldn't care. That's one of the things that gets me excited is once parents start setting up a program with an allowance is they do realize like, oh yeah, I'm actually spending less money than I would have or was before because now they are in control of their money. And when they are asking for something, you now have a way of saying, okay, well, that's something that's on your allowance. And if it's not enough allowance, then they can come back and negotiate it. But it also gives you the ability to say, no, that's, if you want to save for something, then you need to save. And I will help you with a goal. And you can set what we call a SMART goal, which people may be familiar with.
These skills that they acquire spider out and will serve them later in life, like the negotiation skills and being able to tie a cause and effect together. And, you know, this behavior causes me to earn money. Yeah.
No, it sounds very empowering. Isn't that, it's fun to see them go through that process and use money in the way that it's a tool. Like that's what you want your kids to do. It's like, this is a tool to get some of the things that I want. I can't get everything that I want, but it is something that I'm empowered with. And that's really where you want. That is the money empowerment goal is that, you know, they decide and they're only going to figure this out as they go. And they're going to figure it out way beyond the time that, you know, we are parenting them. As they go through life, they realize, oh, the best way for them to figure that out is to go through the process themselves. Just like that's how we figure out, you know, how can I use money to craft the life that's going to give me the most, that's going to give me the most fulfillment. And that's not to say, you know, everybody knows intuitively that money doesn't make people happy.
Right.
But there's no doubt that not having enough money, especially for the basics, will make life miserable.
Can you speak to some factors that play into continued financial illiteracy and what your organization does to combat those factors?
I mean, the primary thing that we do is really to work with parents to help their kids. I think of financial literacy as like this kind of three-engine plane. And the reason I think of it like that is like a commercial airliner is designed so that if all the engines are working, you go from your takeoff position to your destination and it all works out well. But if one of the engines goes down, or even two of the engines of your three engines go down, you can still fly the plane and then you can kind of land the plane. It's designed so that you can still fly the plane, but you're not going to get to your final destination. You're going to just try to land wherever you can land in an emergency. And so the three engines we think of, that I think about with financial literacy are direct instruction, modeling, and experience. And there's a lot of effort that goes into this idea of direct instruction. So direct instruction can be parents lecturing their kids, but it's a lot of it is teachers lecturing students. The problem with that is that that's not necessarily correlated with behavior change. Now, there is some research that suggests that it can be, and there's research that suggests that it is not, or if it is, it's not really moving the needle very much. I am certainly an advocate of teaching in the classroom. But it's the other two engines where I think we can do a lot more. And it's the area where I think credit unions can do a lot more, because it's the modeling and experience. Because experience, like I said before, that is how we all learn. And we learn from our mistakes as well as our successes. And the modeling, this is the part of this empowering parents, is the modeling really, really matters, because the kids, you know, we've all heard the saying, you know, they do what we do, not what we say. They're watching what we're doing. So if we're talking to them about being money smart and they can see that we are just spending our money on, you know, lots of different vehicles and it's causing some issues within the family, they're going to take away from that a lesson that's probably not the lesson we want to get across. So that modeling really matters. The experience really matters. And I think they probably matter more than the direct instruction does. And again, that's not to say the direct instruction doesn't matter. It's to say the modeling and experience are really important. And this is where credit unions can come in, because can come in and really make a difference. Because a lot of times I see institutions just check the box. So they're like, okay, we're going to send our volunteers into the schools, check the box. We are now doing what we need to do to provide financial literacy in the community. Where the bigger opportunity is to our whole membership, the ones who are parents or guardians, we can help them raise their kids money smart, you know, providing accounts for the kids and helping the parents help them use those accounts in order to, you know, become money, you know, money smart and money empowered. Credit unions creating these programs and using the programs like our program to help their members raise money smart kids. That's beyond just the idea of empowering them to help their kids.
Andrew Manthai is a business development specialist at GreenPath. He has deep credit union knowledge and has been at GreenPath for 13 years, bringing a strong foundation of financial knowledge, design, empathy, and compassion for Americans' financial health. Andrew, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having me, Tanya. I appreciate the time.
So tell me, what does financial literacy mean to you?
Well, it's interesting because it is such a loaded question these days. There is so much research that goes into the idea of financial health and trying to understand what are barriers to people being able to live their financial dreams. So we've actually even got this big, hairy, audacious goal where we want to remix the American dream so it works for everyone, because some people, maybe they want to buy the house with the white picket fence, but other people want to pay off their student loans or travel or have experiences. And so the idea of literacy can sometimes be a trap from one standpoint, that everyone has the best of intentions, but the opposite of that can be illiterate. And there are negative connotations that can sometimes come from that. So we really like to look at, can we help build financial skills? Can we help strengthen? So, you know, we started to move from words like improve to strengthen. We started to like really empower people in different ways. And so when we look at the financial literacy, when we look at financial capability as a whole, it's not only taking in the information and processing it and putting it and learning it, but really getting into a position where you can put it into practice. It helps you inform your financial decisions. You're making wise financial decisions overall. So it continues to morph. You know, in the years that I worked at a credit union as a branch manager, loan officer, referring people to GreenPath, coming here, counseling, and even into the work that I do today in a wide range of roles with Financial Health Network and Other things that I've done with Feline and Cuna, et cetera, we've really kind of dug in there in a much deeper way so that it's outside of some of the older ideas of a stand and deliver. I'm going to get up in front of you and do an hour long workshop to how do we understand micro moments? How do we get in front of somebody when their paycheck hits so that we remind them to transfer money over quickly? It's taking a look at all of those behavioral pieces, the behavioral principles at play, and helping people put those into practice in their lives to be successful.
That's incredible. Thank you so much for breaking it down and also for saying that words matter, right? You know, it's that intention that can really make a difference for people, for the people that you're working with. Tell me about what GreenPath does and the way in which you work with credit unions and the community at large.
Absolutely. So we've been around for 60 years, and we were actually started in the basement of the Michigan Credit Union League. So our roots are in credit unions. But even deeper than that, when we actually look at what GreenPath is for, we became more of a consumer credit counseling services. And for a while, it was looking at different things like the reactive side of I'm falling behind on my mortgage. I'm in debt. I'm considering bankruptcy. I'm not really sure what my options are. Now, over the last 5 years, we got a new CEO who is just really dynamic. Her name is Kristen Holt. And she really came in and said, look, we have to put people at the center. We have to not just think of this as a reactive, but we want to look at it from a proactive position. We want to know what people are experiencing, what's their journey, what are the challenges that they're faced with. We want to understand barriers and then break down those barriers through behavioral principles. So we started doing work with Duke University in their Common Sense Lab. We started experimenting and tweaking things. We put over half of our lead team and most of the other people at GreenPath through human-centered design training with Luma Institute. Now, we have been with credit unions for probably 20 years. We have 550 partners across the nation. We really have excelled in that space. We created a partner experience team, which we have 11 individuals that really deal one-on-one with each credit union to understand their unique goals, their unique strategies. How are they really trying to connect with their members? Because it's not a one-size-fits-all approach. And that's one of the things that we hold foundational, is that through empathy, through design, and through behavioral science, we can really begin to unlock a lot of different pieces that can help people be successful. A lot of people get structured or fall into issues with, say, decision paralysis, choice overload. There are so many different options available to them, even banking, that sometimes we see that members of credit unions they're constantly looking for a different product or, you know, what's the easier way that I can go about purchasing a home, saving money, whatever it might be. And so what we really do is work with credit unions to try to understand more about how they can connect on a deeper level with those members and make sure that we're lining up with their goals and make sure that the goals that they're setting line up with the members' ideas of their goals. So, for example, you know, helping people see, I really want to be able to save for holidays. They always catch me off guard. Okay, so we have a holiday savings account. Vacations, I tend to just always put stuff on credit cards. Well, what if we saved throughout the period of time? Or what if we had a really low interest rate loan that might fit there? So it's really kind of identifying those different pieces and working people into a position that they're more comfortable with their decisions overall.
So it's kind of like a marriage of psychology and financial education, not so much promoting financial literacy, but really just deepening the knowledge and like you said, empowerment of these individuals that you work with. Yeah. It sounds like you're doing amazing work within the community. What are some common examples of financial literacy issues that Americans currently face?
Well, I think part of it is the economy is constantly changing. And so you start to run into a lot of different issues. Right now, we're really battling inflation, but 2 years ago, we were trying to figure out cash flow. We were trying to, how do I live on 60% of what I was just making? What are my options that are available through this hardship? How do I make that connection with my financial institution? Because I'm afraid if I talk to them, what's going to happen? So what we really do is we really focus on empathy and what we call nonviolent communication. it's our judgment-free approach, where sometimes just the language that we use can, when people contact in a stressful situation, they're in fight or flight, they are immediately putting up their defenses. They're thinking, okay, how is this going to harm me? And we need to disarm that to really understand the cause, what's going on. And so through this approach, what we find is, instead of saying, oh, so you did this, it's, so what you're telling me is that this happened and this is how it made you feel. And through that, we actually form an emotional connection by tapping into the right side of their brain, the compassion side, which is really fascinating, because then people say, oh, they get me. They're listening to me. I'm validated in what I'm feeling and what I'm hearing. And so let me tell you a little bit more about what I'm experiencing right now. And then once we tap into that, we can actually put together an action plan that makes sense. You know, it's very pointed. It says, look, if you're wanting to do this, here's the things that you could do. What makes the most sense? How can we empower you through this to make the choices that make the most sense for you? Getting information in small chunks, small nuggets, things that they can register and start to put into practice in small ways. So action plans typically maybe only have three items, because people have to be able to move forward. They have to take the next step. They have to have little wins. If you give them a laundry list of 10 things, behaviorally, they're not going to do it all because it can be overwhelming. They're going to take a step back. And so what we often find is that we throw so much at people that they're not able to put it into practice. So even though, you know, you might talk about understanding credit reports and scores and things like that, it's great. I mean, it has to be there. But what we try to do is break it down in some other unique ways. I think another differentiator is how we actually, when we take a look at the financial education piece, it's what are some of the other hindrances to that? When you're talking about the system of credit reports and scores, make your payments on time, that's fine if you get paid every 2 weeks. But if you're working a bunch of side gigs just to try to put food on the table, and maybe you get a bunch of money based on completing this job, but then you have to wait a while, we have to restructure our education to fit those types of lifestyles. We can't just have a blanket approach to education in general.
It's a fact of life, right? No two people are the same, and no two people have the same life or lifestyle or ways of learning. A point that you made earlier was that you can't just throw a bunch of to-do items at somebody and expect them to complete them all. You know, I don't know of anybody who can really do that, who can masterfully achieve every single item on their to-do list by just looking at it once or hearing it once. You know, you have to bend with the wind a little bit and alter your approach as you go. What are some factors that play into the continued financial illiteracy? And you did touch on this a little bit, but can you walk me through some more examples of what GreenPath does to combat those factors?
I think the biggest thing is really trying to push our partners, push ourselves to really not feel like we've got it all figured out, that there's things that are constantly changing. We, at the end of the day, you know, our goals, the thing that drives us every day is, we improve people's quality of life. They could sleep at night. They, you know, could have a solid relationship and they weren't faced with the fear of divorce because they opened communication lines with their spouse, you know, and it's all of those things that continue to just drive us to see how can we improve on a tangible level, the financial health.
What can credit unions do to better promote financial literacy?
One of our partners in Wisconsin actually created a whole new movement as far as their strategic goals. They no longer focused on loan growth, member growth, things like that. They actually centered all of their credit union performance on the financial health of their members. So it was, you know, did they see increased savings? Did they have improved credit scores? Like all of those things factored in as well. And then every product that they're evaluating fits into that somehow. So when they look at it from a holistic perspective, they say, well, this tackles the kinesthetic learners, this tackles the visual learners, this tackles the auditory, this hits on all of the things that, you know, we need to have a comprehensive approach on. And then also looking at what are the biggest barriers and frictions? How do we identify the areas of highest stress or the biggest friction to saving? Is there something that we can do around income, or is it around priorities? So best thing you can do is start to really look at your overall strategic plan, start to create some ideas around that and move forward. My hope is overall that, you know, as credit unions dig deep into people helping people, that they look at, you know, this financial well-being for all, that, you know, all of the things that National Credit Union Foundation, the Cornerstone Foundation are so actively involved in, that it all comes together, you know, that we continue to look at it as a collaborative environment. A good piece of this is to just keep moving, keep swimming, you know, work towards the financial health for all, financial well-being for all.
Well, thank you so much for your perspective. It was really, really eye-opening and further reinforces my belief in the credit union movement. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Tanya. I appreciate it.
You have just listened to the Cornerstone League podcast celebrating Financial Literacy Month with John Lanza and Andrew Manthai. Many thanks to our guest this month, whose definitions of financial literacy inspire us to promote financial well-being for all, not just in April, but year-round. This episode was hosted by me, Tanya Ditburner, and produced by our in-house team here at Cornerstone League. Until next time.